Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
Michael Harvey knows how to speak Chicago. Not bad for a guy from Boston, and good for us, too. His latest novel is The Governor's Wife, and he joins us now to talk about that and hopefully a lot more. Michael, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. And so the governor and the governor's wife, right, a guy facing decades in federal prison. He bolts on the day of his sentencing. Private investigator Michael Kelly's hired 2 years after the disappearance, then to go out and find him. So I'm kind of rushing through that, but the idea is everyone says, well, here's a Rod Blagojevich novel. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. What do you think of that? Because we have a crooked governor, but after that, I don't see a lot of Blagojevich here.
There isn't a lot of Blagojevich in the novel. I mean, I got the idea for the novel from Rod Blagojevich, though. I was watching Rod Blagojevich actually drive down to Edens to his sentencing hearing. And I was working on another book, and I'm watching him, and you know, the media is following him down to Edens with the chopper shot, and he's in the black SUV. And I just thought, as he pulls up to the Dirksen Federal Building, I thought, what if they just open up the door there and he's not in the back seat? Wouldn't that be something? Wouldn't the media that was there just go crazy? So you just have this little idea, and a ping goes off in your head, and you just kind of store that away. And I just stored that little kernel of an idea away and then came back to it. And that's about the only tie-in to Rod Blagojevich in the book. But it was kind of the genesis of it, like, what would happen from there? And that's what you do. You just kind of start with something and off you go.
In this case, Ray Perry, the governor, is at a sentencing hearing. He gets in an elevator at the Dirksen Federal Building and doesn't come out at the ground floor, disappears in between.
Yeah, he disappears. And as you said, the book opens 2 years later, and Kelly's gotten an anonymous email from someone asking him to look into the case, and he takes it up, and one of the first people that he talks to is the governor's wife. And again, you know, the book initially was supposed to be about the governor.
Right.
But then once the governor's wife came onto the scene, once I created that character and she started working her way into the novel, I realized pretty quickly that she was going to be a focus of the book.
Okay, so maybe this is just my own sexist approach to life. I don't know. But I read the book, and I'm getting ready for the interview, and, you know, a lot of times it comes upon me of like, well, whose book is this? Whose story is this? And I'm getting ready, and I'm like, well, this is Marie Perry's story. This is her book. And then, like, well, you idiot, the name of the book is The Governor's Wife.
Right.
I guess.
No, it absolutely is her book.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, she, again, I don't outline my stuff, so I just kind of let the plots and the characters organically unfold. But to me, she was, at the beginning of the book, she's a former First Lady of Illinois. Half the city thinks that she helped this guy escape and is just waiting for the right moment to take off with him, because he took off with $40 million.
Right, which we don't know right away.
Which you don't know right away, right. But half the city thinks she's waiting to just, she helped him escape and she's going to eventually take off and meet him somewhere, because he's kind of become the Whitey Bulger of Chicago. He's seen everywhere, but he's seen nowhere. The other half of the city thinks that she's just a loser who he left flat. And either way, she's pretty much reviled around the city, and she's not a happy camper. And so that's the first... That was my first iteration of her. I was like, okay, when I first started writing about her, she's not going to be a happy camper at all, and Kelly's going to really have to work with her to get any information out of her. Then as I began to work with her, he started peeling away the layers of her life and her relationship with the governor and what was going on in her life, and she just became more and more interesting, and there was a lot more there than, frankly, I initially anticipated.
She has a complicated relationship with her father,
yeah,
Bones McIntyre, former Cook County Board president,
right,
and there is a little George Dunn there.
There is a little George Dunn there. There is just a little bit.
Right.
For people who know
people
George
who
Dunn.
People who know will know.
That's right. We'll leave it at that.
Right. I guess so. But she becomes, you add some sympathy for her with some of her backstory and elsewhere too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think, you know, in a lot of my books, I feel like women tend to take center stage a lot. I guess I just feel like women, a lot of times, maybe it's because of all the work I've done as a documentary producer, I think the level of violence, frankly, that's visited against women and children in this country is really appalling, okay? And I see a lot of women, and I've interviewed a lot of women, who just suffer silently, whether they're in a physical, you know, a physically abusive relationship, an emotionally abusive relationship. They tend to lose themselves and their identity in this relationship, and they tend to sacrifice a lot for the sake of maybe keeping together a family or whatever it might be. And so that's kind of... That's an interesting thing, frankly, for me to write about.
That speaks to a little side story you have in this about a 15-year-old girl, I think 15 or 16-year-old girl as well, who might not have been in the book other than that sentiment you just expressed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, once you start unfolding it, just sort of different avenues kind of open up with respect to women, frankly. And so that's kind of how she, you know, I don't want to give away too much of the book, but I wanted to deal with a certain issue that's a human issue, but it's certainly a woman's issue. And I wanted to deal with it a little bit, and I wanted to, you know, shed light on it in a couple different ways, and that's frankly how she made it into the book.
I want to talk about how a guy from Boston who's still holding on to his accent, right?
A little bit, yeah. You tell me.
Yeah, I can hear it. How he becomes the chronicler of Chicago politics and crime and all, because you have. I mean, you've captured it, and you're doing very well at it. How does that happen?
You know, I came out here to be a lawyer, and then I quickly tired of that and went back and got my master's in journalism, and I started working at CBS as an investigative producer. I worked with Bill Curtis, Walter Jacobson, Lester Holt, Pam Zekman, doing and covering the city every day. I was out there every day doing all kinds of long-term investigations, short-term investigations, going into parts of the city that, frankly, a lot of other people don't go into. And anyone that's covered the city will tell you, as a journalist, you'll learn a lot in a short period of time. And so that was really how I got to know Chicago. And then I went on, and in my documentary work, doing cold case files and investigative reports, I just got to see crime in all different facets of crime across the country. And so all of that hopefully works into the atmospherics of the novel.
Okay, but that's the crime, Michael. But there's more to the city than that, and you know, you carry that too. I spent a month one night in a bar called Sturch's.
Oh, yeah.
Which makes an appearance here. Yeah. Tell me about Sturch's.
Well, Sturch's is...
You remember Tim Weigel, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Al Lerner and I walked into a bar.
Yeah.
And I used to live right behind Sturch's there.
Did you?
Yeah.
I mean, Sturch's, Well, I own a bar in Chicago, an Irish bar called The Hidden Shamrock in Lincoln Park. And so I knew a little bit about the bar culture. And a lot of people that worked at CBS used to go to Sturch's. I mean, it was one of the places that they would hang out at.
Right.
And so I had known about it, but I hadn't really gone in there that much, frankly, until I started working in the news business. And then I started, you know, I would go in occasionally and with some of these guys, and it was a classic Chicago joint. I mean, as classic as it gets. And it was interesting because it was a throwback in time on a strip of Lincoln Avenue, which was, you know, highly gentrified in Lincoln Park.
And then there was Sturch's.
And here was this place selling old style for like, you know, a buck a bottle.
There was a bar next to it. I don't know when Sturch's was open, but I think the bar was just next to it. And it would give out free Silly String every Saturday night or something like that.
Yeah.
So here's Lincoln Avenue, Silly String on one side and then Sturch's on the other.
Only in Chicago.
Michael Kelly also goes into a cop bar. I think the one in the book was in Ogden. I think there used to be one on Webster Avenue.
There was one. Mike's.
Mike's was at it.
Yeah,
Mike's. I walked into that bar one time accidentally, had no idea, and was told that I might be more comfortable elsewhere.
Well, that bar, I don't know if it was Mike's. It might have been another bar, but there were a couple of them where you had a buzz to get in. You know, you had a buzz.
Yeah, I don't know if the door was open somehow.
It might not have been Mike's, but there are some of them where, I don't know if they still are, but there used to be cop bars that you would have to have a buzzer to get in, and, you know, they'd look you over and then they'd let you in. But, you know, there were police bars, and they got crowded after the shifts, and it was an interesting place.
Always an interesting place. You mentioned the Hidden Shamrock, so I suppose I should ask, where is your shamrock hidden?
That's another show. We'll talk about
we'll
that,
do that
show.
Another time. Then let's talk about the Greek classics, because you're a fan of that, and so is Michael Kelly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I went to a school called Boston Latin School in Boston, which is a public school, but you know it's kind of like a test-in school, and it's the oldest school in the country. It's founded in like 1635, and so you have to take Latin the 6 years you're there. But I just happened to really enjoy it, so I picked up ancient Greek while I was there, and then I studied. That's what I majored in college,
mm-hmm.
And then when I went to create the Kelly character, what you do when you create a character like that is you look into your toolbox of all the unique things you have, and you say, okay, what can I throw into this character? And I had spent many, many nights translating Aeschylus and Homer and all of this stuff, and I said, the heck with it. Some of this is going into the books. And so it's been fun. And it's been fun to try to tie in some of the storylines to some of the classics, to the classics that I've translated.
Well, I then wondered, though, I mean, do those classics stay with you when you write?
Absolutely.
Yeah. How does that work?
Well, you know, because what did Aeschylus, what did Sophocles, what did Homer, what did all these people write about? They wrote about crime, murder, greed, you know, revenge, politics, all of the great stuff that makes up a crime novel. I mean, Shakespeare stole it all from them, and then you know we're stealing it all from them as well as from Shakespeare. So they dealt with you know the seven deadly sins, and they dealt with the nature of human nature, and that's kind of what a crime novel does.
That's what I love about books. We can go from Rod Blagojevich to Mike's cop bar to Sophocles.
To Sophocles in one fell swoop.
Michael Harvey, it's nice to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
I'm Steve Bertrand. You're listening to Steve Bertrand on Books.